I'm speaking today with Max Martin, who is a Democratic candidate for Congress in the newly created District 36. Max, first question I like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Because nobody else would.
All right, you want to expand on that?
Well, I've lived out here for 23 years, and we were in a 22 for all that time, and Pete Olson was my representative, and I wasn't really happy with Pete Olson and his theories on the economy and politics in general. And originally thought I was going to go after 22 until it all of a sudden flipped and I ended up in the 36. And nobody, you know, wanted to run as a Democrat. And I think it's I saw the disruption going on in Washington with the Tea Party folks. And I knew I could do it as far as the actual job. And so I just threw my hat in the ring.
All right. Now, tell me a little bit about yourself. You were a retired pilot.
Right. I moved to Houston at 8 years old in 1955. I went to Jesse H. Jones High School, graduated in 64. I went to the University of Houston as a math major. Went to work for Continental Airlines, loading bags into airplanes at Hobby Airport in 65. You know, it was like flying the airplanes looked like it'd be a lot more fun, so I sort of drifted over to the aviation part and started taking flying lessons at Hobby Airport and Cessna 150s and soloed in 66 in 1970. Left Continental, where I had transitioned from loading bags to doing weight and balance and flight planning and stuff like that in the office. And I went to work for Metro Airlines, Houston Metro Airlines, as a co-pilot in 1970. And I flew 3 years as a co-pilot and 3 years as a captain in Twin Otters, going back and forth from Clear Lake City to Intercontinental. And ultimately then Galveston, Beaumont, Victoria, on up into Tyler, Longview, Dallas, DFW, and did that like, until 1976. 79, I started flying Learjets at Hobby Airport. I was the chief pilot director of operations for some folks called corporate aviation there. Then I went to work for different corporations, and ultimately the last 15 years was flying Falcon 10, mainly leaving in and out of the Enterprise hangar at Hobby Airport. In 1992 or so, started a business over here at the same time I was flying, selling educational software on NASA Road 1, and came up with the name Smart Kids Software. It was the beginning of the industry. In 98, the fellow that I was flying for got caught up in the stock market crash and had to sell the airplane, and it was either get another flying job or try to make Smart Kids Software work. So I decided to make Smart Kids Software work so I could take care of my kids and not be flying around the country and like that. And so I got the URL smartkidssoftware.com and started the business online, and in 2001 I was the number 23 fastest growing business in Houston. Got a little plaque from University of Houston, and in 2002 I was number 54 fastest growing businesses in Houston. And so it went from my garage to just under $1 million gross business, and supported me up until the crash of 2008, and my business was cut by two-thirds, and that was when I decided that if nobody else would, I would. And okay, Here I am today.
Now, I mean, the airline industry is one that when you started out was pretty heavily regulated. Now it's a lot less so. I mean, from that perspective, you know, I'm sure you've seen ways in which, you know, federal government, federal laws have, you know, interacted with, intersected with, in some cases interfered with the aviation business. What's your view on that?
Well, I'll tell you what, from somebody that for 20 years, once a year, got hooked up to an EKG at the local doctor's office here and transmitted it in real time to Oklahoma City, the FAA department there, so that they could look at whether or not my heart was working right or not. That's fairly, you know, intrusive, let's say. And I use the analogy of I took check rides with FAA guys every 6 months for, you know, 20 years pretty much, from 1970 till I quit flying in 98. And these were all, you know, government employees. I mean, I knew a lot about the FAA. I have a lot of friends that flew with me that are FAA inspectors right now. I never saw any more conscientious bunch of guys in my life, and they were, you know, all making less money than they would have been out in the private sector, and they were all dedicated to their job, and nobody ever, you know, let up on me as far as in check rides and ramp checks, and I mean, they're out there really doing their job. So I never saw the kind of, when they demonized the, you know, and I talk about that in some of the writings that I did. Would you really want a lot of the different aspects of government, would you want them to like do away with all those inspectors and just let the aviation department take care of itself and the airlines take care of themselves and regulate their own maintenance and decide on, because if they did, it might not be a very good idea, because I know a lot of folks out there that wouldn't necessarily be as conscientious about what they were doing operating the airplane if they didn't know that the FAA was looking over them. And I think that same thing is true with the EPA. If I've known instances where, personally, where folks would like go and contract with local businesses that were producing the toxic waste that they were required to, you know, get rid of in a certain way, and they would take that toxic waste and go out and just dump it out into the county. I mean, I know folks that were doing that, and I've had that sort of thing happen to me personally too. I had a piece of property over by Hobby Airport that the subcontractor would go over to another business, and they took their waste and dumped it into my property over there. And I went and got looking through the property and found documents and led it back to the company that had the waste that they were getting rid of, and went over and said, "Hey, what's the deal?" And, "Oh, well, it doesn't have anything to do with us. We contracted that out." It's just in people's nature, I think, or a lot of people's nature, to try to spend as little on running their businesses as they can get away with, so to speak. And so I'm kind of an advocate for having somebody, you know, overlook what you're doing. And again, I didn't have a problem with it the whole 20-something years that I was, you know, a pilot.
Okay. This new district that was drawn legislature last year, and Texas got four new congressional districts. I mean, it's one part suburban, we're talking here in Clear Lake, and one part, you know, sort of rural East Texas.
Mm-hmm.
How do you campaign in a district like that? How do you present to people that you will represent their interests when, you know, their interests aren't necessarily the same as other people in the district?
Yeah, and the thing about it is that the what I call 22% of East Harris County, it's hard to really tell exactly what the percent of it, but it's a pretty good chunk of East Harris County. And then you've got the eight other counties. There are more registered voters in this 22% of Harris County than all of the other counties together by about 50,000-60,000. All right, and then you've got the Clear Lake City chunk, and that part of the southeast Pasadena that's kind of really, you know, if you go around Ellington and go out that way, the houses are all kind of built by the same folks that built the Clear Lake City houses. I mean, it's just kind of a Pasadena part of Clear Lake City, you know, and the folks that live there are pretty much the same. And then you've got, you know, into the part of Pasadena that's very heavy Hispanic, and you got the Channel View folks, and you've got the Deer Park people, and then you come on around, and you got La Porte, and then you come up to Seabrook and over to El Lago, and you come this. I mean, it's an unbelievable distance mentally between Clear Lake City and Seabrook and La Porte in these areas out there. And then you take, you know, Chambers County, Baytown, Mont Bellevue area, and then you run on over to like Winnie and you've got Orange County out there just on the other side of Beaumont, and then you go up to Newton and you come around. I mean, like, you know, it's mostly rural. There's each one of those little Jasper, Newton, Hardin all have a central sort of town or city, but everything else is just rural around there. So mine is this. All right, my family moved here from Caney, Kansas. My mom grew up out in the county in Kansas, and my dad lived in Copan, Oklahoma. That was, probably 400 or 500 people lived there. So, I mean, we came, my grandmother and grandfather lived with us, and we were kind of like, one of those original families that had the grandmother and the grandfather and the father and the mother and, my folks stayed together till they both passed away, and the two boys. I mean, I was like, we were like the Cleavers, and we moved here to the big city from the little town, but we were still little town people. And I was raised by little town people. But I was raised on the city of Houston in the 60s. I rode my 55 Ford up and down South Park, which is now Martin Luther King Boulevard, and all over town, actually, until I was married. And then I started flying all over the state. And then I started flying all over the country and out of the country. So, I've got a pretty good idea of where we are and where, I've flown into little towns all over the United States, and I like little towns. And so if anybody can represent the two mixtures, the several mixtures, I think it would be me.
What do you think are the top priorities or top needs for this district?
Well, right now the top needs for all of us is the economy.
And what would you do about it?
Well, we need a balanced approach, and I don't want to sit around with talking, what comes out of MSNBC or what doesn't come out of Fox News. I like to think I'm like in the middle of the road kind of a guy, but we're not going to be able to get out of this mess by cutting taxes, and we're not going to get out of this mess by just cutting spending alone. We're going to have people are going to, have to put some money in to get us out of where we're at, and some people are going to have to stop taking as much money out. And so, I mean, I wrote a little thing about it just the other day. By the end of this year, the debt's going to be like $16 trillion pretty much. certainly it's down from what it was, but it's still running about, 1.2, something like that right now a year. As the debt is going up, the interest on that we're paying yearly on the debt is going down because we're retiring older debt and with newer, lower interest. But at some point, if you'll look at the chart of, how the interest rates went, it's going to go back up again. And if we get stuck with, a whole lot of debt when the interest rate goes up, the amount that we spend on the interest could be as much as we spend on defense. So I think we really do need to get this deficit under control, and then I think we need to get this debt paid off. And they talk about, making tough choices, but the folks that I see with the tough choices are more tough on the folks that don't have anything rather than the folks that do have things. So, I've studied it out. I'm one of those guys that stays on the internet pretty much all day long from the time I get up in the morning until I go to bed at night. When I see something I'd like to know more about, I Google it and check it out and look at all kinds of different sources. I think there's a group of people that don't believe that they should be paying taxes, and the head of the Republican Party, Mitt Romney, is one of those folks. He thinks that the 13.9% he paid is too much, and he'd like to pay nothing. And I understand his dilemma, because he would like to be a billionaire, because he hangs out with billionaires. And if you only got $250 million and you want to, you hang out with billionaires, you don't feel like you're very significant. And I think that's a mindset problem there. And they talk about the class warfare thing. It's not a matter of class warfare. I think that Mitt Romney probably takes advantage of more government programs than the little family living on a rural road out in Newton. I think that when he flies around in his private jet, and I know a lot about flying around in private jets, the amount of money that's spent supporting his ability to be able to fly around the United States and all over the world is money that's paid for by everybody's taxes. And the amount of money that they, what we were spending, like, what, $320 billion a year on the military or the defense in 2001, and now we're at like $650 billion. I don't think that the poor African American family living out in the county up in Jasper really gets as much benefit out of that $650 billion we spend on the military than ExxonMobil be able to have their worldwide oil power out there with our military behind them. So, you know, I think a great deal of what the United States spends is spent on people with a lot more money than really what it is on the people that don't have any. So maybe I'm a romantic, but that's where I'm at.
Okay. This district does include NASA.
It does.
You know, NASA's been going through a lot of changes lately. They've been, you know, after that successful Mars Curiosity landing.
What a deal.
You know, it's not really clear what's in their future right now.
Right.
What do you want? What do you want to see happen with NASA?
Well, I'll tell you what. When I don't know how old I was when Sputnik went up, probably like 9 or 10 or something like that, but I was 9 or 10 years old, whatever I was. I cut out the clippings out of the paper, and I had a scrapbook on the space. For some reason, that was just something that I really kind of, you know, and I guess everybody else in the country did too, but I really did. And again, being an airline transport pilot rated person with, you know, a whole lot of time. I've got probably, I don't know, 10,000 plus hours, and a lot of it was at 39,000 feet. I wasn't an astronaut, but I bet I could fly the space shuttle simulator. You know, I think folks really do have a connection to NASA, and I'm not a big fan of privatization. I would like to see NASA continue. Right now, I think the budget is something that's, I don't think we need to go out and like double the budget on NASA with the financial, physical condition that the country's in. But still, that, you know, I don't know that we need to be spending the extra money on sending human beings in spacecraft to Mars, because the difference in the what you have to spend to ensure the life of a person that's actually in the vehicle compared to a robotic type thing like what they have right now is significantly more. So maybe we could like hold off for just a bit sending humans there. But, you know, I wrote a little thing about it the other day. I would like to see maybe them get into something sort of like the Avatar project. Go beyond their little car-shaped looking thing and maybe start working on something that was a robotic type mechanical thing that resembled a human more, and that could actually be driven by somebody here, just like what they're doing with expand upon what they're doing with the rover. So, you know, I'm behind NASA 100%, always have been.
Okay. The Affordable Care Act, upheld by the Supreme Court, well, there's the question about Medicaid expansion. Just briefly tell me, what would you like to see done next with healthcare? What ways, if any, do you see to take the Affordable Care Act as we have it and make it do more, make it be better?
Right. You know, I was always a fan of the single payer. I personally would like to have seen, and I'd like to see us have the ability to buy into Medicaid. Whatever the cost of Medicaid per person comes out to, then you can like get a policy that's Medicaid and you pay a premium that pays for it so that the federal government doesn't have to pay anything. I had a real problem with my insurance company for the 5 years prior to when I was eligible for Medicare, because they have you in a, when you're like 60, between 60 and 65, you can't do anything. And so all of a sudden your premiums, just like if you have an independent policy like I did, your premiums just really go through the ceiling because you have no choice. You've either got to pay it because you can't move, and they really got me pretty good during those periods. So I'm not a big fan of privatized health care. And actually this year I received, because now I have actually a Humana supplement type thing, or the version of Medicare that I do through Humana, and it cost me, I don't know, $90 a month or something like that. And they sent me a check for $250 because of the affordable health care. It's I'm sure not perfect, because it was something that was orchestrated in a practically a brawl in Washington at the time, but it made it out the door. And I think it's a step in the right direction. I think that they just need to stay on top of it. They've made corrections to it, since it was implemented. And so it's better than what we had. It's been demonized so much in the right-wing press that I'm just not so sure how that's going to come out. But I think it was wasn't everything everybody wanted, but it's a step in the right direction.
You have in this race the benefit, if you will, of running against someone who did serve in Congress before for a term and distinguished himself in some ways that aren't so good. You have the not so benefit, if you will, of running in a district that was drawn to elect a Republican. It's pretty heavily Republican.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you convince people in a district that's drawn to elect a Republican that the Republican that they nominated is maybe not the person they would be best served having as their representative?
Well, the fellow you're talking about, Steve Stockman, in the runoff, received 21,000 votes or thereabouts. And the way I see, and there's like 460,000 registered voters in the district. I think those are his supporters. I mean, I think everybody that liked Steve Stockman voted in the runoff. I don't think you had folks that liked Steve Stockman that decided to just not show up. I think they probably voted early. So there's not a lot of fans. I've been out in the counties a lot over the last 6 months, and when Steve Stockman first became one of the possibilities, and then later after he won the original primary or was one of the winners, I haven't run across anybody out there that didn't have a negative opinion about him. And since the runoff, I've had several of the Steve Takach, is that how you spell
it? I think
so. I haven't run across anybody that knows how to pronounce his name either. but I've had them contact me, just as a lot of the folks that are running against Cruz contacting the Paul Sadler, a little bit upset with the way Steve Stockman ran his campaign during the runoff. Telling me that they're going to support me. Whether they support me or whether they just don't show up, either way, I'll take it. I think that this district, and they've been telling me for 6 months, Sandra with over in Austin, and everybody that had anything to do with the Democratic Party has been telling me for 6 months that unless I wanted to put a couple of $1 million into this race, there was no way in the world I could win it. And I think at this point, the way it's evolved, since Mike Jackson's no longer the established Republican candidate, and with Steve Stockman, who has not run a campaign at all, he won with 4x8 signs all over the district saying NRA endorsed. And that's his whole thing. I don't think he's going to get out and run at the general. He's not a go out and get with the people kind of guy. I think he's going to base his whole candidacy on those signs all over the place, and that there'll be enough gun enthusiast to go out and do it. So I believe that the 36 has the best chance of actually producing a Democratic representative than any of them in the area right now. My biggest problem that I have right now is the further left side of the Democratic Party. I haven't had any battles or fights, right, you know, except for the one I had up in 6 months ago up in Toledo Bend when I went up to a Tea Party a group they invited me to. I had a little trouble with those folks. All of my problems over the last short term was with the further left side of the Democratic Party. So I think we can win this thing if all the Democrats in the district actually got together and realized that in November, it's either going to be Steve Stockman or Max Martin. There's not going to be any libertarians voted in as a congressman. We in 2008, 99.3% of the votes that were cast were Democratic or Republican. A libertarian or a whatever there else is out there is not going to be elected the representative for 36. It's going to be Max Martin or Steve Stockman. We know what kind of a representative Steve Stockman is going to be, just like he was in the early 90s when he was there the last time. He wants to let the NRA do away with the three-day gun registration thing. He wants to do away with the First Amendment and have a government that basically has serious restrictive religious views. And he doesn't think that Mitt Romney should pay any income tax at all. And those are three pretty big things, I think.
Max Martin, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.